Evening, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Stefan Molyneux from Freedom Main for Friday Night Live, 7 at change p.m., 26th of September, 2025. 260925, 2 days into my 60th year. And I have the audio in my good ear. I'm about to start rapping and then coughing, I think. All right. So we're broadcasting to a wide variety of platforms here. I'm happy to take your questions. I'm happy to take your comments. You're welcome to call me up if you are on X. And Sunday will be subscriber only. We'll be running that off the Locals platform, but also broadcasting to X. So I hope you will join us for that. If you haven't subscribed to me either on subscribestar.com/freedomain, freedomain.locals.com, or X, you can go to fdrurl.com/X, or just search me up on X. Click on the header and there's a nice subscribe button there. I would gratefully, deeply, and humbly thank you and send you feet pics. Actually, just a picture of a third of a meter. But if you're really into meters, that's your bag, man. That's your thing. All right. So, looking for questions, comments, issues, feel free to raise your hand if there's something you want to run past me or oppose me on or something like that. I've been spending a good chunk of the day thinking about free speech. Wild what's going on out there in California, man. I can't believe that's going to pass any constitutional check, but I suppose that's not the point. This is a constant encroachment. It's constant encroachment. They're going to try and get digital IDs working in the UK as if they don't already have, like, how many pieces of ID do you need? How many pieces of ID do you need? Your driver's license, health card, social security card, retirement benefits, a membership card at the library, passport. I mean, it's just insane. But of course, the purpose, just so you know, the purpose of digital IDs is so that the government can label you problematic and people can deny you services, right? It's, you know, basic commie social credit stuff, right? That's the general idea. It has nothing to do, of course, with trying to help anyone out. You won't be able to work if you don't have a digital ID. It's like, so they will prevent you from working. Thank you for the donation, Adam. They will prevent you from working if you have wrong thing. Honestly, it's just going to be a way to turn on and turn off social services through thought crime rules, right? Through thought crime rules. So, you know, there'll be some person, maybe a foreigner, who'll be maybe checking you out in the grocery store, and then, ooh, I'm afraid that you've been branded racist. Oh, I'm afraid that you've posted social media stuff. And this way they don't have to send girls in uniform over to pretend to use something, knock down your door. They can just wean you off being able to participate in society by attaching a global computer ID to everything you do. That's all. And AI will then scour your emails and your posts and eventually where your eyes go in a cleavage video. And you will simply be denied services. And the funny thing is that I talked about this social credit score stuff 20 years ago when I was talking about how a free society, a stateless society, would work, an anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist society or voluntarist society, that you would have to adhere to basic social norms, not use violence, not defraud, and so on, in order to participate in social society, in order to participate in the economy. And I remember I sort of made the argument and I said, think of the number and amount of economic interactions it takes just for you to go and buy some milk at the grocery store, right? You have to be allowed on the sidewalk. You have to be allowed on the bus or on the road if you're biking, or even on the sidewalk if you're walking. You have to be allowed into the store. You have to be allowed to purchase. You have to be, you know, all of those sorts of, like, everybody's participation is required for you to be part of the economy in a civil society. And this, of course, was without a government, right? That plus, like, so that way of minimize, you would want to, in a free society, you'd want to minimize how much you hit people with this kind of stuff. It would have to be pretty egregious. Could people say, well, what if you murder someone and there's no government? Well, first of all, if you murder someone and there is a government, it depends whether you're on the left. If you're on the left, you might get away with it. People getting away with crazy stuff in the West these days. So, but it would be like, well, your economic participation would be turned off until you had satisfied the requirements of repentance and compensation for your crime. So having a way for society to ostracize you in a free society is wonderful and great and lovely and delicious and delightful. On the other hand, having this in the hands of a government, particularly with AI, it's going to be horrendous. Now, wasn't Keir Starmer associated with communism when I was younger? I was reading about that. I think that's true. But you should double check these things for yourself. But, and you know, I think there'll be a pushback, and I think that people won't participate, and they'll just wait until they try it again, try it again, try it again, try it again, try. Oh, there we go. There is no end to the human hunger for control. I mean, if there's anything that came out of the 20th century, it's that. There is no end to the human hunger for control over others. For a drug addict, what is the end of the drug addiction? Well, you either hit rock bottom, try and turn it around, or you die. And drug addiction tends to be illegal, as is illegal gambling and other sorts of things. So drug addiction tends to be illegal, and people still pursue it, yea, verily, unto the death. I don't know if you've ever known anyone who's died of a drug overdose or drug addiction, but it's a pretty ugly, vicious process, and it generates, of course, an intense sense of helplessness on the part of everyone around you. This is why, if you've ever watched, it's an interesting show to watch. It's called Intervention. It's a documentary when, you know, sort of friends and family of somebody who's spiraling into addiction, you know, sit them down and they say, you either go and get help or you're cut off, you're ostracized, we will never talk to you again. And it's a very powerful show, and it shows how ostracism is really the least utilized but most powerful way to, I wouldn't say control society, but to reinforce positive behavior. I mean, it kind of happens in relationships, right? I mean, if somebody goes nuts in your relationship, then you don't date them anymore. You break up with them, right? That's ostracism, right? Somebody is at you're at a job and you do something stupid or bad, or maybe the boss just doesn't like you, get fired. It's ostracism, right? So ostracism is a great way to run things in a free society because people want the minimum amount of control. Just enough to reduce or eliminate violence, but not so much that there's this huge rebellion. And of course, in the past, when the king was just a guy with like 500 blades at his disposal, and you had, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of subjects, there was a sort of balance to the power. But the same technology that could set us free is going to be used to tyrannize people as a whole. And I've never wanted or liked the idea of controlling others. Have you ever been tempted by that? You can call in and let me know. Or have you ever had somebody who has tried to control you significantly? I would say I was in a relationship where the woman was a little bit on the claustrophobic and controlling side. Nothing major, but I rebel against it just deeply and enormously. None of that. Like, that's not how it's going to go. That's not how it's going to go. But I don't understand why people want to control others. I don't. I mean, I suppose it's an addiction. I know that, you know, we've talked about this before. When bonobos climb up the social hierarchy ladder, they get massive amounts of dopamine released in their system, endorphins and so on. And so it is sort of physically addictive to go up in the dominance hierarchy. But just how demonic and horrifying a human being do you have to be to want to control and bully and humiliate and threaten and arrest millions of people, or want to do it to tens of millions of people? It's wild. I don't fundamentally get it. I mean, I'm very happy in my life. I have about the most meaningful job, it's job, quote job, about the most meaningful job in existence. And I thank everyone here for that. I have great relationships with family and friends, and got my health, which, you know, when you get older, when you're younger, it's just, you don't even say, touch wood, right? Got my health. And it's pretty, things are good. Things are good. And I, one of my first videos was live like you're dying, which is to say, at some point, maybe you're 80, maybe you're 90, maybe you're younger, older, but at some point you're on your deathbed and you get that slow shake of the head from the doctor. Doc, am I going to get better? And he's going to say those fateful words. Well, I'm afraid all we can do at this point is make you as comfortable as possible. And you realize that the sheet sticking to your back is what's going to be used to carry you to the morgue. That you're never getting back up. You're never getting back out. You'll never feel the blood rush to your feet again. You'll never get even slightly dizzy getting up too soon. You're never going to climb a tree. You're never going to climb the stairs. You're never going to climb out of bed. You're going to lie there and expire there. Like you're a sandcastle under the sort of drizzling rain of endless mortality, you're just going to dissolve down into nothing, be reduced to your component atoms without the emerging principle and purpose and brilliance and glory and morality of life and consciousness. And the nurses will come in and the nurses will go out. And they will go on with their lives. And they may mention, oh, there was a sweet old man, there was a sweet old woman. Really, really hammered the morphine drip. And your family, the older members of your family will be ashen-faced, realizing that they're next. Middle-aged people will be exhausted because they've had to care for you and their kids. The teenagers will be bored and restless. And the younger kids will run around and jump up inappropriately and be pulled off your rough one thread, weird fabric that makes up your sheets in hospital. And you will realize that you maybe have 5 meals left, 4, 3, 2, last meal, last bite, last swallow. And every time you close your eyes and lay your head back on the pillow, it will feel like you're falling down into eternity, and you will jerk back up and you will try and cling to life. But you will also realize that by extending your life, if you can, through willpower, you will be extending the agony of those who have to watch you die. And at some point, you may just relax and fall into the great beyond, into the arms of your ancestors, or into nothing, into judgment, or as much consciousness after you die as you had before you were born, which is to say, none. And people will cry both in sadness and gladness, sadness that you're gone, but gladness that your suffering is over. And the little kids will ask when you're going to wake up, and their parents won't know what to say. And all the people you had your conflicts with, your cousins, maybe your brother-in-law, sister, will look back at all of those conflicts and will say, I really didn't understand any of that. Why did we fight? Why did we not talk to each other for that year? What would I give now to have another conversation or another year? And as you're dying, I think, time slows down. This is what the reports are of people who died and came back. As you're dying, time slows down, and I think you revisit all the major points and decisions and choices in your life. When it's too late to change any of it, I think that the entire mechanic and purpose and principles of your life are laid clear to you at the end. And the girl who was just right for you, but maybe not quite pretty enough, that you left for the hottie borderline, she will come back and say, you could have had this, but you had that. And your cousin who wanted you to start a business with him, but you were being too well paid, so you ended up being a cubicle serf under the sightless, Sauron flickering eyes of endless fluorescence. And you clawed your way up through some kind of hierarchy, got spit out the side. Couldn't take your chair home, it was bought by the company. But it didn't even cool down before some new ass sat in it. There was some cake, there was some goodbyes. You drive away for the last time and you look back and you say, how much of my family time did I sacrifice for these people who are going to forget me tomorrow? And the moral cowardice. I think all of that is revealed. I think you're right, Simon. At the end, everyone has a conscience. And the moral compromises you made. When you yelled at your kids, I said you'd do better. Stop yelling at my kids. And then you just forgot about it and went back on autopilot, back on the train tracks of circular inevitability based upon unexamined harshness from your own childhood. And that time that someone really reached for you and needed you, but you kind of walked away because you were kind of embarrassed and didn't know what to say. Or the time when you had a conflict and stormed off, even though staying and talking would have changed your whole life. All those times you refused to ask for what you want, but expected people to read your mind. And because they can't read your mind, you got to bully and dominate them. All of that stuff, I think the curtain is lifted and it all just becomes utterly clear. All the good you failed to do, all the people you failed to correct, all of the truths you chewed back, bit and swallowed like broken glass, humiliating, sliding down, cutting your windpipe, silencing your voice, turning you into an NPC. Did you do everything you could? Your conscience will ask as you die. And that will feel like an eternity. There's a reason we believe in limbo. Did you do everything you could to make the world a better place for those around you and those who come after you and those you make? Did you do everything you could, short, sadly, of things like getting forced to drink hemlock, tortured to death, or shot through the throat? Did you do everything you reasonably could to do good? Or did you leave the world a graffiti and garbage-strewn hellhole of incompatibility for your children to try and find a way to navigate through? Did you bring wisdom to people? Did you tell people when they were doing good that they were doing good? When you saw people who were doing wrong, did you say you were doing wrong? Did you engage the grappling hooks of your conscience in the grim battles with other people's avoidance? Big questions. big questions. The devils of distraction reveal everything at the end. Everything. I think everything gets revealed, even if it's not just as you're dying. Most people spend at least a couple of weeks on their deathbed. It's a lot of time to think about things. When it's too late to fix anything. When it's too late to fix anything. I mean, look around you right now. Look at your hands, look at your body, look at the twin ghosts of your nose that stick out like a prow in front of your eyes. When you are old, and when you are dying, and dying isn't just falling off a cliff. Dying is being told you'll die. Dying is being told you're going to die. Weeks or months before you die. Some of the people I've been in business with have died recently. People I've known 20, 30 years. They're older than me. But not by much. What wouldn't you give on your deathbed to come back to where you are now with the choices and the options and the will and the health and the mobility and the strength? What would you give at the end of your life to come back to where you are right now? Why? What would you give if somebody said to you, when the doctor said you have hours to live, how much would you pay to get back all the time you spent playing video games or watching shows that weren't that great, distracting yourself? Get all of that time, weeks, months, years for some people, to get back all of that time that has been wasted. What would you do if you just came back from your deathbed and woke up where you are right now? Maybe you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. You know how bats send out echolocation, right? They send out these little ghetto ceiling chirps, and then it comes back and rescue it fractalis style. That's how you know where you are. You know, you got to send that ping forward in time, friends. You got to send it. You got to send it. Please, I'm begging you, please send that ping forward in time. If you're not at least in part navigating by the return from your deathbed, you're not living much at all. You're in a haze of now, you're in a haze of dissociation, and I am too. I'm not saying I'm perfect this way, obviously. Ping, deathbed, and back. Ping, deathbed, and back. And the ping to organize your life, to tell you what's important to focus on, to give you courage. Courage is really nothing more or less than the genuine realization that you're going to die. And cowardice haunts you in your final months when it's too late to do anything. My father wrote a biography of his life, which was long. I think I showed up in two or three paragraphs. And he died without telling me he was ill or contacting me or addressing any of the issues I brought up with him decades before. Don't do that. Because, and the best way really to organize your life is not just to focus on your own deathbed, which is important. But if you really want to have a life of depth and power and purpose, which I would highly recommend, you need to send that ping long after you're dead. I live my life in part by what people are going to say at my funeral. I've had to give, at least once, a eulogy for someone who barely lived. What do you say? She liked handing out candy at Halloween. That's really all I could think of. She wasn't part of her community. She didn't add much to the world. She didn't raise good kids. She didn't do much except breathe, consume, age, and die. A houseplant would be less dissatisfying because you don't have expectations for a houseplant. What we do echoes in eternity. It's cheesy stuff. Do you want to be known after you're dead? What do you want people to say at your funeral? Well, he played through Halo 9 times. He liked his shows. He spent a lot of time on social media. Didn't really do much. Consumed. Black pill, doom scrolls. You know, you flick. You know what it's like? It's like an elevator. You just look into the floor as you're going down, 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 down. Or do you want to be that guy or that woman where 6 months after you're dead, people can't really remember what you looked like. The memories kind of fade because they were copy-paste, one of the same. It's like trying to think of an individual pearl in a pearl necklace. They're all kind of the same. Or when you bid your own days goodbye, you look back and just see this unbroken copy-paste of sameness. No particular peaks, no particular valleys, just there, chasing little scraps of dopamine in a descending spiral to nothing. This gift. Would you rather be a clam that inherited $1 million or a human being born desperately poor? There's no greater gift than what we have. You know, they found DNA on asteroids. We may have actually been assembled from the ragged guts of detonated stars. And think of all the heroes that you watch, people who did stuff with their life. If you like historical heroes, if you like contemporary heroes, people who do stuff with their life. And you have this gift, these days. Everybody knows they're finite, but very few people live with that knowledge, live based on that knowledge. And I'm not saying be a workaholic, because that's not resting and enjoying. And being a workaholic is simply being a slave to money or status or expectations or authority or dominance or need, yours or others. Don't be someone who leaves only residual cliches in your wake. You know, like the ebb down of the beach, right? The waves come in and they leave that little ring of foam, right? Ragged line of foam where the top of the wave is. And you watch that, right? Ragged foam, and it vanishes. The next wave comes in, or even if it doesn't, even if the tide's going out, never gets the high water, it just vanishes. Just bubbles, disappears, drops, the bubbles, gone. Don't have, in the high water mark of your mortality, you leave a ragged line of cliches that vanish with you. I've often thought that when they can teach you to be afraid of thought, all you can do is spout cliches. I did a whole listener conversation, which will be out soon, about how to understand the narcissist. To the narcissist, you're just the NPC in his game. You just do what he wants, and you don't have any needs of your own, and he just uses you to achieve his quest, to thing, an object. But if they can get you to eschew thought, to not think, to not be original, to hoard your silent skepticism away from others, like a child hiding a mouse he brought home, then you have nothing to say that is going to surprise anybody, nothing to say that will offend the petty and the vicious and the foolish and the corrupt and the evil. And so if they take away your free speech, does it matter? If they ban me from being a lead ballet dancer for the Bolshoi, does it matter? No. I'm 59 years old. I'm not going to be in ballet. If they can get you to not think, what do you care if they take away your rights? If you're never going to say anything surprising, original, controversial, vanity is just the fear of feeling or being or appearing original. If you're never going to say anything thoughtful, original, startling, upsetting, what do you need free speech for? Free speech is there to protect the unpopular, and if you're so physically, spiritually, emotionally, and intellectually weak that you can't conceive of surviving saying anything unpopular, what do you need free speech for? Like in Italy and France and other places in Europe, it's virtually impossible to fire people. You might even have to go to a judge with their employment history and prove to the judge that they deserve firing. Can you imagine? I want to break up with you. No, it's not working out, man. Sorry. We need to part. No, unflushable. And then your bunny boiler girlfriend goes to the court and says, Your Honor, this guy wants to break up with me. I need to tell him that he can't break up with me. Well, I'm going to need to see all of the things she did that make you want to break up with her. And then you can break up with her, maybe, but she can still sue you. You got to pay for dates for at least a year, maybe two. Well, if you're never going to be an entrepreneur, then all you want is protection from being fired. If you're never going to say anything startling or original or thoughtful or offensive, you don't need free speech. They get you to live small. What do you need your rights for? Your rights then become, well, I'm sorry, you have appendicitis. Well, just take out the appendix. It's no biggie. I can live without it. Take my rights. I can live without them. Why? Because you're not doing anything with them. Rights are there for when you need to push the envelope, and need to challenge people, and need to overturn established falsehoods. Rights are not for, okay, I'll meet you at the movie 8:30, yeah. Or bigotry is bad. Or I like the government. Or bad people should be punished. Or apparently, there are no Nazis in the West. There are only communists calling people Nazis, trying to get them killed. He's a Nazi. So once they can get you frightened to speak the truth, frightened to confront perfidious falsehoods in all its forms, once you don't have free speech in any practical sense, and in the West you really don't have much free speech in any practical sense. I mean, maybe the government can't put you in jail, but people will lie about you. They'll mass report you. They'll get you banned. They'll get you silenced. They'll whatever, right? To the point where you'll end up losing much more voice and income than if you'd been charged for something at all. So, what do people care who don't think, who don't reason, who don't communicate, who aren't striving and fighting for the good? What do they care if they lose their free speech? They don't. They're not using it anyway. What does the fat guy glued to the sofa care if they close down the gyms? What does the agoraphobic care? 2 weeks to flatten the curve. You're going to have to stay home. Oh, thank God. Out there is people everywhere. Send that echolocation to your deathbed and beyond, and have it come back and inform you what you need to do. Let eternity dictate the scope of your ambitions. Let longevity dictate the volume of your courage. Or the blessing and great opportunity of this life becomes an endless curse and spreads. And then, of course, and I'll take your call in a sec, but then, of course, what happens is you end up spreading your smallness. It's an infection. I'm trying to spread as best I can, live with reasonable Aristotelian mean levels of courage. Right? That's my argument, right? As Aristotle said after fleeing Athens, I'm not going to let them sin against philosophy twice, because they were going to put him to death too. He who fights and runs away lives to fight another day. Discretion is the better part of valor. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. These bromides have great value. Do maximum virtue before they kill you. Then stay alive to do more virtue. Martyrdom advances very few rational causes. Not none, but very few. Because you're either going to spread courage or you're going to spread cowardice. There's nothing else. You're either going to spread concentration. I can see the posts on locals and YouTube and other places. So you're either going to spread courage or cowardice. You're either going to spread grandeur or pettiness. You're either going to spread concentration and focus or distraction and dissolution. You're either going to spread love or something even worse than hatred, which is indifference. You're either going to spread fight or flight or freeze. You have no choice whether you have an effect on the world. You only have a choice what that effect will be, positive or minus. And entropy, avoidance, fear dictates the minus. It only takes one act of courage for people to believe that courage is possible and important and valuable, essential. And it doesn't take many acts of cowardice for people to believe that cowardice is the sensible, the norm, and the only valuable approach. Yeah, sorry, Joe just arrived a little late. I'll absolutely start over. All right. I think we've got Drygon. If you've got something you'd like to chat about, I'm all ears. Going once, going twice. You might need to unmute.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Well, that's cryptic. Yes, I heard you. Hello, hello.
Hello.
I'm going to just give you another 5 seconds. And just, you know, just in general, people, if you're calling into a live show, please have a decent internet connection. Hello? Don't call in one bar on a plane. I just have a decent internet. It's not my end. I've got a fiber optic. So, all right. I guess he's wasting our time. Jay, if you wanted to ask me a question, I'm thrilled to hear. Now, you just asked to speak, so I don't think you're distracted by my eloquence.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, sir.
Hello, good evening, sir. My question to you is, do you agree or disagree that our whole human society is built on manipulation?
It's built on what?
Manipulation.
Drygun, you're going to have to wait because you weren't coming through. Yeah, our whole system is built on manipulation.
Yes, yes, that's my question.
Well, but you're going to have to define to me what you mean by manipulation.
Like an internal or external influence that controls a person, something or someone.
I'm sorry, if you can hear me, I can't hear you. I'll leave and try to come back.
All right. So is our whole system is built on influence? I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, there are coercive relationships, and then there are voluntary relationships, but both fall under the category of influence, right? So if a guy, if Bob sticks a knife in against the ribs of Doug and says, give me your wallet, and Doug gives him his wallet, then there's been influence and so on, manipulation in a way. And if my wife asks me to get her a cup of coffee and I go get her a cup of coffee, I mean, there's been influence, manipulation, or whatever. She's manipulated me, not in a negative way, but in the same way that you would manipulate a Rubik's Cube or whatever it is, right? So you're going to have to, I think, if you could, just be a little bit more specific about what you mean.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you. So my question is, do you agree or disagree, like, the whole human, our system, human system is built on manipulation? I mean, manipulation can either be good and also bad.
But saying that something is good or bad doesn't help. I mean, we all have influence on each other. I would be more precise in my view, and maybe you're right, but I would say our entire system is based on violence. How do we educate our children? Coercion. We force people to pay for government education. We, in many places, force children to go. We trap them there, and it's like a prison. And we indoctrinate them, and they can't get away. And we don't pass them if they don't repeat back the indoctrination with sufficient enthusiasm. And then you go into the workforce, and maybe you're hired because of DEI, which is under threat. Or maybe you're not hired under DEI, which is because of a threat. And you got to pay your taxes, and you have to contribute to wars that you probably disagree with, and your time, energy, and economic value is used as leverage to borrow against so that your children end up in 10 times the debt of the taxes you paid. I mean, it's all coercive. If you don't pay for the old age pensions, for which there's no money, then you go to jail. And if you don't pay for the foreign wars, or you don't pay for the soft enslavement of the young through the education system and the soft enslavement of the poor through the welfare state and the soft enslavement of the sick through socialized medicine, when you go to jail. So I don't know what you mean by manipulation. Certainly violence is shielded by language, right? So violence is shielded by language. Oh, you're not aggressed against. It's a social contract, voluntary. Well, it's not indoctrination, it's education. Don't you want people to be educated? Right, I was reading today about a study that said that one's preference for socialism is dose-dependent, dictated by almost the level of illness you experienced as a child. So the more sick you were as a child, the more you like socialism, leftism, or maybe even communism. And so healthy people don't need the state as much, don't want as much government, and so the government has every vested incentive to make and keep you sick, which it's doing a fantastic job of doing. Ridiculous amounts and numbers of people are on endless chronic fistfuls of medication. It's appalling, in my view. So I think that the system is built from the ground up on violence, and it's not a system that we ever would design from the scratch. It's just we inherited it. And to hide the violence is the purpose of propaganda. Diversity, equity, inclusion. It's like, no, just say you don't want to hire white males. I mean, that's what it's really all about, isn't it? So it's sexist and racist. Okay. So they have to invent all of these words so that people don't see the fist in the face, the gun in the room, so to speak. So I would say that there is manipulation in society, but I don't think it's specific enough to the institutionalized violence that we experience on a daily basis that is covered up through endless amounts of propaganda so that people don't see it for what it is. Does that make sense? Or if you disagree, that's fine. All right. I think we have lost Jay. Dylan. I've done more for Dylan Thomas, said Bob Dylan, than he ever did to me. Dylan, what's on your mind? Don't forget to unmute.
Oh, sorry. Hey, Steph.
Hello.
Hey, I was just wondering, I wanted to get your take or opinion. So we obviously always, we all denounce and reject violence of any kind and in this context, particularly in political violence.
Well, no, hang on.
Yes, sir.
Violence of any kind? What about self-defense?
Okay, you're right. Yes, sir.
Okay,
yes.
I'm sorry. I'm not a pacifist. I'm sorry to be a nitpicker and a nagger, but that kind of is philosophy. So, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Anything that isn't self-defense, like what happened with Charlie, for example. I just need your opinion if maybe I'm missing the forest for the trees sometimes, but how do we kind of influence culturally, you know, the next generation, or just how do we get away from this more leftist propaganda? Is it just by speaking truth? Is it by these debates? Or, and when I say missing the forest for the trees, is it more focus on yourself and your community before, you know, trying to build a major platform and you know, influence people globally.
Are you a Christian man?
I have been going to church recently, yes.
Okay. So the answer is in the Bible. The answer is in the Bible. Now, of course, you can do your global stuff. You can set up your channels. You can do your podcast. You can write. You can blog, whatever it is. I get all of that. And that's fine. That's great. But how do you shake people out of the grip of evil? Well, first of all, they don't know that it's evil. And I would grant them, you know, people who are propagandized, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. I'm 100%, because we all started propagandized, well, maybe not originally, but very early on, from daycare onwards, we all started propagandized. And it's going to get loud here, just so you know. I'll just take my earpiece out so I don't get that loop back. So we all start off propagandized. When I was in my early teens, I was a socialist. Why? Because it just seemed like a very positive thing to do. I didn't know anything, but I had gotten the impression through propaganda that it was niceness and goodness. And of course, we didn't want these evil, cold-hearted capitalist robber barons running things and exploiting the workers. Anyway, so of course, you can't hand your children over to a socialist system like government education and expect it to teach that capitalism is good. You send your kids off to be educated by Caesar. Don't be shocked when they come back as Romans. So we have to shake people out of their trust in me, right? We have to shake people out of their hypnosis. Literally, it is a hypnosis. Like when I was a kid, I got my first train set. I loved trains. I got my first train set and it was a circle. It was a circle and I put it on the little cheesy sticks and sticks hardwood floor in the apartment, the flat. And I hooked it up, wired it up, plugged it in, turned it on, and it went round and round, round and round, round and round. And that's people's minds, just round and round, round and round. Well, you wouldn't want people to starve in the streets, would you? Well, church lady stuff, right? So people are propagandized. And I think it's important to be patient. I do. I think it's important to be patient with them, but not infinitely. So how do you influence people to give up their addiction to pretty, pretty violence and learn to become moral? Well, because they don't listen to reason, it's a carrot and a stick. Now, the carrot is, it's true. It's good. Look at my life. I live it according to reason and evidence. Things are great. I don't forgive. Willed without it being earned. I do the right thing as much as reasonably possible without masochism, or at least not too much. I have love, purpose, self-esteem. I sleep well at night, exercise. I'm a happy, healthy, productive guy. You too can have this, all this. You just got to give up evil. You too can have abs, but you got to give up just sitting around all the time, and you probably have to give up some Cheetos. So you got to have a carrot. Live a life that a sane and rational person would want. If you want to be a personal trainer and people can't see any muscles, not that I have a lot, but if people, you know, that little vein, right? If people can't see that, I'm a personal trainer. We're going to have to meet on the ground floor because I can't really do stairs. They make me huffy. Well, that's not going to be great, right? If you don't show up chain smoking and telling people, I know how to quit smoking, it's easy. So you've got to have a carrot. You have to have created a life that people are going to have some interest in. I think people have looked at my life and said, well, you know, he survived a couple of blows and attacks and has come out a positive, peppy and happy and enthusiastic and effective guy. So that's your carrot. Be someone that other people might want to be. I'm not a flash in the pan. I've been doing this for 2 decades. Number one. Number two, after you reason with them and show them and teach them, for whatever time period it is, not forever, I say a month or two, whatever, right? It's not hard and fast, but just in general. Then, if they don't want to be like you, and they won't listen to reason and evidence, then ditch them. Ditch them. Make them pay. You cannot be around me if you lick the bloody knife of corruption and violence. I will tell you it's violence. I will show you it's violence. If you continue to support violence, you can fuck off. And if you think like coming back, fuck off again. If you think of coming back again, maybe if you want to learn, I'll teach you some more. If you then reject peace and embrace violence, particularly political violence, you can fuck off again and then don't come back. Without the GTFO, what you got?
Oh, please, 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 it's a violation of the non-aggression principle, please. If you could just not be violent, that would be so nice, please, I'm begging you.
God, have some, I'm not saying you, but have some pride, have some spine. Spine, I tell you! If you're Jew, don't have Nazis around. If you're a capitalist, don't have communists around. Don't have people around who want your ass arrested by men and guns and thrown into jail because you think differently. Don't do it. They will fuck your life up every which way but Sunday. Make them pay. If you want to be around the glory of me, it's great. Love to have friends. Love to have people in my life. Mwah! Beautiful. Oh, a little price of entry, though. You gotta not love bloody knife-edge violence. You gotta not love people getting shot through the throat. Is that a ridiculously high bar? I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, if my bare minimum for going on a date was, okay, I just need you to agree ahead of time you're not going to murder me on the date. Just do me a solid. Shake on it. Spit hands. We don't need to prick fingertips. Just spit hands. Shake on it. You don't kill me before the end of the day. You're not a murderer, not a serial killer. I'm not going to end up chopped up into a soprano box and thrown in the Hudson. Can you sign something about that? Can we shake hands on that? Now, that's not having super high standards. I'm not saying you have to be an intergalactic virgin from the 17th century. I'm just saying, please don't kill me before the end of the day. And if you came across a Bumble or, oh, what are the other ones? Plenty of Fish or Tinder or something like that. And there was some super hot woman or man. And it was just like, I'll go out with anyone who doesn't kill me. Would you say, oh, whoa, whoa, hey, come on, man. Lady, come on, man. I mean, those are really insane standards. I mean, listen, I'll be happy to go out with you. 36, 24, 36. I'll be happy to go out with you. I'm not agreeing to this crazy demand you have that I not kill you before the end of the day. I mean, come on. Let's be realistic here. Men have needs. Let's not get nuts here. I reserve the right to not fulfill your crazy expectations to not be killed, right? That would be insane. So that's all I'm saying. That if you want to influence the world for the better, love it. Love it. Join us up here on the ramparts. Love you. Love to have you. It's bracing. It's cold. It's exciting. The dawns are fantastic.
Thank you, Steph.
Work on yourself to the point where you have some positive energy and enthusiasm and excitement about the moral mission of the world, of mankind. And then tell people, bare minimum entrance to my life is you gotta give up violence. No beating your kids, no hitting your kids, no support of political violence, no enthusiasm for people getting shot, deplatformed, arrested over memes. You gotta let go of the gun. Drop the gun, and you can come into the club. This is a gun-free zone in my life. Gun-free zone. Political gun-free zone in my life. Because if people can't see the obvious and won't reject the corrupt, it's not some abstract thing where you say, oh gosh, well, you know, it's really, really important from an No, these people are messed in the head. Communism, 100 million dead. Well, yeah, technically, but no, whoa. I'm sorry. We only do sane here and not evil. So, yeah, can you reject the initiation of the use of force in human affairs? Can you reject shooting people for disagreeing with you Can you reject the gun in the room? Can you reject violence? Is that a crazy high standard? I mean, after that, there's certain levels of compatibility and fun and all of that. But yeah, can you reject violence? I mean, I was into peaceful parenting long before I was a podcaster, and it's what my wife and I talked about when we were dating. We met in 2003. So we met February the 13th, and then we only didn't go out February the 14th because it felt a bit odd for a second date to go out on Valentine's Day. But after that, we spent every day together. I proposed within a couple of months. We got married within 11 months after our first date. And we had those conversations, and I said, I'm not going to punish. I'm not going to yell. I'm not going to hit. I'm not going to confine. I don't even want to do the naughty stares, timeouts. I'm not doing any of that. She's going to reason with the kids. She's like, meh, sounds great. Sounds right. I mean, she practiced psychology for decades, and she's her education at the undergraduate and graduate level was in child development, so. I think that's a meme from a video game, and I don't know what it means. I do not know what the meme means. So, sorry, that was a long chat. Dylan, is that helpful?
Yes, it is. Appreciate it, Steph.
All right. Thank you very much, JC.
Jesus Christ, Gonzalez.
All right. What's on your mind, my friend? How can I help?
Hello, Stefan. First of all, thank you so much. I've been a fan for a very long time. I have many things to ask you, but I have one thing that came up. I'm an artist. I was in Hollywood for 10 years. I was on TV, commercials. And during 2016, it's almost like the faucet got turned off. I didn't know why. And I eventually realized that is because some of the things I was posting on my private Facebook and things like that. I'm an immigrant. I'm Colombian. And so I think a lot of what I believe goes against the narrative. Anyway,
was it because of the hysteria that it's the Trump's ascent to the presidency drove a lot of people on the left really batty?
That was a part of it. I actually, this is a funny story. I got on CNN. I was in front of the CNN building, and I enrolled them into giving me a microphone because I told them I was an immigrant and I had a poem to share with them. And I said, I'll just tell it to you. Everybody out there looking for change, you just got to look inside if you want real change. It might sound a little scary or sound a little strange to realize that all your dreams are within your range. So pass me the mic. Let me address the nations. I'm not just talking to you, but the entire human population. Lyrical creation is my vocation. I'm volunteering in the rap kitchen and world starvation. So stop looking for the handouts and reaching for salvation. Doing what makes you happy is your only obligation. Let me give you the translation with no hesitation. Obama's nation was an abomination.
Word to your mater.
And so by the time I got to the end of it, they were like, what? And they started blowing horns and they started trying to grab the mic for me. And there's hundreds of people there. And so sure enough, after that event, I never booked a job again in Hollywood. I got callbacks, but it seemed as though the ratio of opportunities to me actually getting jobs just completely evaporated. And so, frankly, I gave up and I transitioned more into music, which suited me more because I get to actually share my thoughts and feelings and what I believe about the world.
What do you do in music?
So I started out on MTV. I did some reality stuff when I was 16, 17. I let people get in my ear and I went to Hollywood. And long story short, you know, I got some opportunities with Sony Music and Warner, and after actually giving money to people, their solution to making it big was, well, let me, you know, the head of the studio likes his boys on the yacht.
And oh, it's like, no, you almost got Bieber'd or Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, and then literally, I mean, people who 1 second say, you know, hey, you have talent and all these things. And I just literally handed a guy $15,000 to write and produce some music with me. And that was his marketing strategy. And
was
so
to get
after
you on
that,
a yacht and oiled up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so
and
sorry.
Then he just told me, yeah. And he just gave me this whole spiel about, oh, he's a Christian and he's got four girls. And I just saw the devil horns, you know, coming out as he was saying all that. And so that was a wake up call for me that, you know, I don't want to be at the mercy of these people. And And I think the thing with Hollywood too, like, why would I want to be a mouthpiece for these kind of people? So anyways, I had
on three separate occasions, two women and one old gay guy, if I would sleep with them, they would advance my career. And it's like, I'm really not that good in bed. It's not worth it. No, I'm kidding. But it was just not tempting. But sorry, go on.
But anyways, I really took on the Henry David Thoreau, Ralph Waldo Emerson approach of, okay, I'm going to just sit down and I'm going to learn how to produce. I'm going to learn song composition. I ended up doing the math and I got a motorhome for the price that I would pay for rent in Los Angeles. And I lived on basically in front of the ocean for 2.5 years. I was using solar panels and connecting to the Google headquarters Wi-Fi. And I was, it was Walden Pond, you know, and my motorhome was actually called
Wi-Fi,
Walden.
But yeah.
With Wi-Fi. And I was living a life of purpose and making music. But I still was not, I didn't have the courage to release the music that I had produced. And I'll be happy to send you some of the songs that I have. I have one in particular. But anyways, fast forward 10 years, I moved to Houston, where my family is. And I'm still making music. And I've run across some opportunities with some conservative circles here that really align with some of the things that I want to say. And I'm not political. I'm very much anarcho-capitalist. Thank you for planting that seed in me. But I ran into Dan Crenshaw yesterday at an event. And I have a song that I really want to share with him called Mrs. Weatherman. Yes, as it sounds, it's an amazing song. I'd be happy to read you the lyrics or sing it to you. But
I love music. Fill my ears with some glorious noise. I'm a happy guy, so go for it. Sing it if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Let me see. I'll try to play the instrumental here. Just for the sake of having some background music. I'm getting nervous. I'm just gonna say tell you the lyrics.
Oh, come on. You're okay, a performer. Fine. Perform. Listen, okay, I sing on this stupid show and I'm not any good. So go for it, man. Okay. Come on.
Got it. I'm getting nervous. All right. Let's see.
If it's any consolation, we're not playing a stadium here, so go for it.
No, for sure. Let's do it. Okay, so I wrote and produced this.
Mrs. Weatherman, would you tell me what's going on out there? Mrs. Weatherman, will we make it through? Mrs. Weatherman, would you tell me what's going on out there? Mrs. Weatherman, is it really true? Will we make it through? 'Cause every day I come here and sit, this little window where I see.
Attention addicts, tuning in to watch you choke. Has a sound of snoring, scat so loud.
Now we call it woke.
You say capitalism is evil, but have you checked your bank note? From the profits of lying, they hate you by.
Where the reparations on your joke?
So when I speak up, the facts are denying. Go on and cancel me, just say
children were dying.
Or going overboard, you open a door to groom and young to do no chores. Cause rather than take out trash, you move your thumbs, I'll shake that ass.
Every day I come here and sit. Little window where I see, and every day it comes just to hear how the world is psycho. Where did the light go? Gonna cast my vote with no idea. I see we're going nowhere. So tell me, Mrs. Weatherman, is the world I got there? Or the blue that I see, yeah, the blue that I.
We all have to sit in traffic, cause a few of us won't go. Then we go making cubicles, cause it's all about the dough. But have you checked the temperature? Cause I think we're ready to go. Living lives of quiet desperation. Yeah, we're starving for the truth in this so-called modern nation. I'll feed you the dick of truth, bit by bit. So you and all your friends can take it in moderation. Can take it in moderation. Are you ready to receive my dick of truth?
what's going on out there. This is what I meant. Will we make it through? This is what I meant. Would you tell me what's going on out there? This is what I meant. Is it really true?
Wow, very nice. Very nice. It's funny because sometimes the mic came through really clearly and it sounded great. Other times it was a little muffled, but I really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. That's fantastic.
Thank you. I'd be happy to email you the proposal thing. But anyway,
so email me the actual song if you can, and we'll put it into the show, like for when it gets published, if you want.
Hey, okay. That would be an honor, man. I mean, a lot of these ideas came from foundations that came from a lot of things that you taught me a long time ago, and the non-aggression principle, and a lot of this the background of the song Mrs. Weatherman, by the way, is it's like in the music video I will be dressed as a transgender weather reporter reporting on the weather, and I'm reporting that a storm is coming, and you better watch out. And as you zoom out, you see a father and son in a living room, confused because they look outside and it's sunny skies. And so it's this this idea of, you know, what is reality and how can the average person really tell what's going on when we can't, like the window that we see reality through our phones, right? That's the, where we get our information. We can't tell. So there's a lot of metaphor and meaning, and I had the opportunity yesterday to pitch this song to people who are in the conservative movement, in the hopes that there would be maybe some production value that I could get and shoot like an Eminem meets Tom McDonald kind of music video and be able to release it to other outlets like The Daily Wire or James O'Keefe or people that I think could really, and you know, shoot this bullet, because and the cover of the song is a bullet aiming to the left with a microphone on the right, and written on the bullet says Mrs. Weatherman.
Nice. Well, I'll send you my resume as a rap backup dancer. People don't get to see me twerk nearly as much as they could dread it happening. So yes, send me it in and we'll stitch it into the show. And I really, really do appreciate that.
That's amazing. So I guess my question is, how do I do this? Like, if I have a message to send and I've been hiding for almost 12 years now, artistically, is there a way for me to put this out now and really, you know, have it heard and that it really lands for people? And yeah, and that's where I'm stuck right now.
So I'm thinking of a fellow. I'm going to just double check his name. This is a fellow I've met a couple of times. I'm just going to check his name. Not Jamie. It's Jordan. Let me just check here. Jordan Page, I think he is, I saw him at a bunch of, I think that's him. Yeah, so Jordan Page, P-A-G-E, he would be a good guy to get in touch with. I'm sure he knows me. We've been at the same conferences and stuff like that. And he's a great singer, songwriter, political activist, and so on. And I remember him doing an acoustic version of Shine On You Crazy Diamond, like the whole thing. It was just like jaw-dropping. It was so good. And so Jordan Page Music, I think if you ping him, I don't know if you drop my name or whatever, I think that might help, but
I spit on the mic on your show, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I would say get in touch with him because he's been able to find a way to make it work. Whoever you like in the industry, you know, and I would say this to everyone as a whole, like, reach out to people. Like, you never know. People, especially, he's like 46 now, right? So he probably wants to pass the torch. And people who've accumulated a lot of knowledge and a lot of information, they want to help people. They want to help the next generation. They want to, you know, I've done shows where I teach people about podcasting. You know, like, So don't feel like you have to be the icebreaker. There are people who've gone through before who can introduce you to the right people, who can listen to your songs, who can give you some advice. But my basic thing is just get it. This is my philosophy for creation and production as a whole. Get it down, then get it right. So I'm just working on a book at the moment, and I just have to get the text down. I just have to get the text down. Then I can get it right later on. I can, because the process of creating clarifies the end product. So, you know, when I finish writing a book, I can go back and layer in everything beforehand. You know, like at the end of the present, I didn't know that the woman was going to get attacked by a bunch of savage dogs. So when I was doing my edits, I went back and put a bunch of dogs in earlier barking at people to sort of put it in as a foreshadow. So just get it down, you know, get it recorded as well as you can. And if you have to shoot a cheesy video because you don't have much budget, shoot a cheesy video. That's fine. You know, there's lots of people who do great stuff. It's just filming them in the studio, even if you're lip syncing or whatever. So, you know, get it down. And then if the song takes off, you can do a professional video if you start making more money and so on. But yeah, get it down and get it out there, because it doesn't do any good sitting in your drawer. It doesn't do any good sitting on your hard drive. So get it down, get it recorded as well as you can. Contact people.
It's already produced. I mean, I'll send you the final version. It's radio ready. That's I played you an instrumental.
Okay, so if the issue is the video, then I would.
And it gets to be fun. I mean, the video is meant to be like Eminem, like making fun of people. I want to dress up as Hunter Biden. I don't know how you feel about this, but I even wanted to do blackface Kamala Harris, like rapping on the mic. Like I wanted to do the most extreme.
Well, wasn't there a black guy doing whiteface at the moment? And not very complimentary whiteface, like real cheesy Bubba Texan yelling at NASCAR kind of whiteface. So I think that taboo has largely been broken. But I would say, and also I would get out and perform it. Like there's got to be open mic nights. You know, just get out and get used to performing it. See what the audience likes, see what they don't like. Like the moment I could get out of the studio, which I did for quite some time, and go and give speeches and talk to people live. So, you know, get out there and perform it and get it into the hands of people. Shoot a cheap video until you can afford a more expensive one, but just get it down and get it out. Waiting for it all to be perfect is, you know, the perfect is the enemy of the good, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, send me in the song. I would absolutely love to put it, I'll put it in the... I'll put it in the show. So rather than, you know, what was coming through the mic, which I mean, sounded great, but didn't have great quality because of the limitations of the tech. But I would send it in, we'll drop it in. And of course, I hope that if people want to get in touch with you, they can just come through me. You can email support@freedomain.com if you like this kind of stuff and can help. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've been dealing with, and I've been struggling with just what to do in this world. And I did a podcast recently about the Charlie Kirk thing, and just like what is truth. So I'm just excited to share this song, and I appreciate the opportunity to sing. I would never in my wildest dreams think about singing on your show.
No, it's great. I love it. I mean, we've had a few people over the years share their musical talents. I love it. I'm in awe of people who do music, because I love music, but music doesn't love me back. So I'm in awe of people who do it, and I'm thrilled that you're doing it, and whatever we can do to help get your song out, I think would be fantastic. All right, so let's do another caller. Bobby, if you want to unmute, I'm happy to take your thoughts. Yes, sir. Vamp, pause. Unmute. Yes, no. All right. People are in and not in. Adam, you should have been first. Anyway, what was it? I had a joke in a novel many years ago where there was this woman who was so old that it surprised no one that her first husband's name had been Adam. Anyway, so Adam, if you wanted to unmute, yes, no. And the only other person we have is Dragon. All right. Well, it looks like we have either some tech issues or people who've ascended, or hopefully, based upon my earlier speech about dying, they haven't joined the choir invisible. freedomain.com/donate. help out the show. I really would appreciate that. Have yourself a glorious, wonderful, lovely, tasty evening. And we will see subscribers at 11 a.m. sharp. Well, sharpish. 11 a.m. On Sunday morning. And I have finished recording the audiobook chapter 6 of my new book, which is coming out for donors as I'm doing it. And so lots of love from up here, my friends. Take care. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.